Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, November 16th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Blong, Council to Mull Review of MPD. Mayor-elect wants to discuss best path forward over handling of school officials' indictments. By Stuart Doreen. Editor's note, the Reporter Telegram will offer Harwood's opinion article this weekend in the Viewpoints section. Mayor-elect Lori Blong said Tuesday she would like to have conversations with the Midland City Council as to whether to call for a review in the processes and personnel that led to the indictment of current and former staff members at Midland Christian School and the Trinity School of Midland. On Tuesday, Council Chamber at Midland City Hall was filled with supporters of both schools. They came to voice their concerns about police actions and to call for an independent investigation of the arrests that took place. This past week, a Midland County grand jury indicted current and former MCF staff members Matthew Counts, Jared Lee, and Dana Ellis on charges of failing to report child abuse. Also indicted last week were four Trinity staff members, Shelby Hammer, Todd Fries, Crystal Myers, and Adrienne Clifton. The charges are also failing to report child abuse. I do think that we are going to have some conversations with city council members and evaluate the best path forward, Blong said after the meeting. And once we have a consensus on that, then I think we'll move forward, and we will have some sort of review. But that process needs to take place in due course. When asked if the council might call for a review before or after trials involving those with Midland Christian or Trinity, Blong said, I don't think that we have a consensus on the council for that. My personal perspective is that I would like to do something sooner for benefit of our community, but I don't know that I speak for the whole council on that. In May, following a different grand jury's decision to not indict Midland Christian staff after a different charge of failing to report child abuse, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton called for the community to let the process work itself out. We, as a people here in Midland, Texas, cannot act like other places and seek to intimidate or harass or influence the legal process, Payton said at the time. If you lose hope in the process, we're losing hope in liberty, and we cannot afford to lose that hope. Payton added, that doesn't mean we won't continue to evaluate and taking a good hard look at why we did what we did, how we can improve and get better as we seek to serve and protect this community. Those who spoke inside council chambers were unanimous in their call for a review of procedures and personnel related to the indictments of current and former school employees. One after one, parents, teachers, and others supporting MCS and Trinity staff members called for the council to look into the weaponization of the law related to the arrests. In the case of the recent MCS arrests, they stated that the charges of not reporting abuse were inaccurate because every single witness, and even the person struck with a bat and the person's parents, described the incident as an accident and never reported it as abuse. They called for an investigation of the arrests and indictments and to right the wrong direction of a culture created. Be bold, admit the mistake, and take action, another woman stated. These comments came during the public comment period. During the meeting, city leaders are not allowed by law to address those speaking, but hear those who came to council chambers to speak. Glenn Harwood, a Midland attorney already committed to a run for district attorney in 2024, offered a statement Tuesday about, quote, how the Midland Christian School and Trinity School cases have been handled by our police department and district attorney, unquote. The former federal prosecutor wrote, quote, on more than one occasion in my life, I have had people close to me who cared about me and wanted the best for me and the people around me be bold enough to pull me aside and say words to the effect, you really missed the mark on this. This is not who you really want to be. Do better. In the context of my experience with our law enforcement community, and coming from a position of deep regard for our law enforcement community, I say we missed the mark on this. This is not who we want to be. We must do better. This article is entitled Peyton, City to Learn from the Past, by Stuart Doreen. Mayor Patrick Peyton said city leaders learned lessons from the Centennial Park process, and they don't want to repeat them with a $55 million Hogan Park. Peyton was one of the panelists from the Midland City Council on a panel that answered questions about the Northeast Midland Park, including questions that came up during recent city elections. Midland City Council members and a member of the Quality of Place Conservancy participated in the forum Tuesday night at MLK Center. Peyton, in answering questions about rules currently in place at the downtown park, told those in attendance about being careful where he walked his dog, a reference to dogs not being allowed on the Great Lawn at Centennial, and not having balloons. Balloons for parties are not allowed. Peyton also said leaders wanted to take good things from the downtown park, like the private-public concept. He said that tens of millions of private dollars were available because of the conservancy idea. The people donating the dollars want this to go to the park, Peyton said. Other questions addressed the Quality of Place Conservancy, the makeup of the board that will ultimately oversee the park, and why the park project won't be determined by a citywide vote. Information included that the makeup of the board that will oversee the park has not been determined. Editor's note: the forum ended after deadline. The Reporter-Telegram will have more information at mrt.com and inside the Thursday edition. This article is called Small Bites. Couples bring cozy aura, good sips to Midland in permanent state. Hoop and Barrel adds tapas, craft cocktails to area's options. Text and photos by Morgan Taylor Thomas. What started as a joke between management looking to retire a business and regulars searching for their next adventure quickly turned into real life. Now, just 45 days after acquiring the space from Bean and Grape owner Ray Blanchard, Ashton Hooper and her husband Ryan, along with other couple co-owners Jesse and Cameron Willman, held host their grand opening of Hoop and Barrel, a tapas and craft cocktail joint, Tuesday, 3211 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 21. After watching their mobile business, Hops and Bubbles, take off within a year, Ashton and Ryan knew they wanted to bring the same aura and good sips to Midland in a more permanent state. In partnership with longtime friend and chef Clint Kjenstead, the duo hopes to pair one-of-a-kind food creations with their drinks. Focused on comfortability for all, Ryan said any and everyone can find a spot in the lounge to cozy in and enjoy a nice evening out. The main goal is a laid-back and fun atmosphere, Ryan told the Reporter-Telegram. We want it to be a space where somebody who may be used to dive bars doesn't feel intimidated about going into a cocktail place and getting a nice drink. And they can always follow it up with a Coors Light if they want. Wondering what's on the menu? Here's the scoop on all things Hoop and Barrel. Hot Bites. Although the restaurant won't be serving full-course menus, the tapas surely fill. Items include guaca rolls, savory roll wrapped with shredded cabbage, pork, or avocado, American nachos, kettle chips, ground mustard, ranch, and pickle peppers, rum springa, spring or veggie spring rolls, Texas black cats, jalapeno cream cheese and bacon folded in a crispy wonton, and an array of charcuterie boards and more. Kjenstedt's top three suggestions: the Southern Couch Bites, fried green tomatoes with pimento cheese and balsamic glaze. Timberwolves at New Jersey, prosciutto and brie baked in a triangle wonton. And the Three Amigos, four pepper chicken, pimento cheese dip, and customer's choice of green chili, chipotle, or sun-dried tomato basil hummus. With plans already instilled and brain wheels turning, brand new tapas will roll out every 4 months, keeping the menu fresh and the novelty alive. Cold sips. What's a cocktail lounge without a strong list of, well, cocktails? A diverse listing of flavors and liquor make up the specialty drinks. Luna Azul, Campari, Grapefruit, Lemon and Lime form the Italian Paloma, while Smirnoff Kissed Caramel, half and half, pumpkin puree, a cinnamon sugar rim, and whipped cream mix for the Oh My Gourd. Ashton's recommendations include the Todo Esto, Mezcal, Aperol, Sweet Vermouth, and a cherry garnish. And the Desert Ranch Water, Luna Azul, Desert Pear Syrup, Lime Juice, a rim coated in tagine, and topped with Top Chico. Just like the tapas, cocktails will remain seasonal, and items such as flights and bubbles will find their way into the menu as well. For non-liquor drinkers, a Goliath amount of beer and wine stand available. For craft beers, choose from Voodoo Ranger Juice Force, Community Beer Lager, Odell Hazer Tag IPA, Samuel Smith Oatmeal, Wells and Young Banana Bread, Deschutes Hositron IPA, Deep Elm Dallas Blonde, and Dogfish Head 120 Min IPA. On tap, pick either Tall City Brewing Company's Haze Y'all, Honey Blonde, or Haboob, or the Beer King Stigney White Stout. A beer flight containing all four draft options can also be purchased. For domestics, Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Light, and Michelob Ultra. As for wine, eight findings: J. Lohr Cabernet, Decoy Cabernet, 14 Hands Merlot, Bread and Butter Chardonnay, Hampton Water Rose, Oliver Blueberry Moscato, Marchese Felici Moscato, and Lamarco Prosecco. Overall vibes. Even though my surprise pop-in to Hoop and Barrel got mixed in with the liquor license discussion and other business talk, Ashton and Clint graciously welcomed me in. What felt like an interview turned casual chat amongst friends really spoke to the crew's vision of creating a laid-back space for all Midlanders. As someone who doesn't drink very often and frequently finding myself intimidated to go into a cocktail lounge, the warm attitude and friendly perspective spewing through management felt inviting and worthwhile. Furthermore, with bright eclectic art, lights and excitement fill the space, making the long rectangular room festive and playful. Aspects some places trade in for dark-lit rooms and bland colors. To me, reasons remain obvious why Ashton and Ryan's first business took flight so quickly, and why the high hopes and standards I currently hold for Hoop and Barrel will unquestionably be surpassed. Make room on your "I need to check them out" list, because Hoop and Barrel should come in at number one. This article is entitled "Vote on Benson Statue at Stadium on Hold" by Stuart Doreen. More details are needed before the Midland City Council votes on placing a statue of Cedric Benson inside Midland's football stadium at the Scarborough Sports Complex. A Midland City Council vote to accept a donated statue of Midland's most accomplished high school football player was put on hold because council members, including John Norman, wanted to see details of the statue. Norman said, "No one has seen what the statue might look like." John White, a former Midland resident, has contacted the city requesting to dedicate a life-size bronze statue of Benson behind Gate 2 of a Stound Broadband Stadium, according to city documents. The cost of the creation, the transportation, and the installation of the statue will be covered by the donors. Once installed, the statue will be donated to the City of Midland. The item on the agenda also called for the city manager to negotiate and execute all necessary documents and instruments for the acceptance of said future donation. However, before the statue is commissioned, Mr. White would like City Council's approval, according to the agenda document. The city will also be able to review a sketch of the sculpture before the artist gets started on it. White told the Reporter-Telegram that there is no problem in his mind waiting for the December meeting. Benson led the Lee High School football team to 3 straight state championships from 1998 to 2000. He also established himself as the greatest football player in Midland history and produced one of the top prep resumes of any high school football player in the history of Texas high school football. A few months back, I came across a thought of a way to inspire young athletes in Midland to discover their personal greatness, White wrote in a letter to city officials. Being an extremely grateful recipient of the blessings I received as a player on Rebel Teams 11 and 12, I desired to contribute, albeit in a small way, to future athletes that are enrolled with MISD. What I came up with was to have a life-size bronze statue created to memorialize the most prominent football athlete, at least in Rebel history, but in Midland, Texas in general. That person is the late Cedric M. Benson, who played for the Midland Lee Rebel football varsity 1998 to 2000. White wrote that among those he has contacted is Benson's mother, who gave White her approval to go ahead with the project. Others he reached out to include City Councilman and former Rebel John Norman, Benson's high school coach John Parchman, MISD philanthropic athletic contributor Doss Rogers, and current Rebel football coach Clint Hartman. This article is entitled City Manager to Retire in April by Stuart Doreen. Midland City Manager Robert Patrick has set a date for his retirement. In the Midland City Council agenda packet, there is an item calling for the execution of an employment agreement with the city manager. The term of the proposed agreement commences on November 16, 2022. A memorandum from John Onemiller states, and terminates on April 28, 2023, at which time Mr. Patrick plans to retire from service for the City of Midland. Patrick became city manager in April 2021, according to a previous Reporter-Telegram article. He had previously served as interim city manager and assistant city manager. He has worked for the City of Midland for around 12 years. In a question and answer with the Reporter-Telegram in 2021, Patrick hinted that this day would come. After serving in city government in many differing roles for the past 28 years, it is great to cap my career in a wonderful city like Midland as the city manager, Patrick wrote. This article is called In Brief. The first story is entitled MPD Investigates Possible Fraud at Oil Gas Company. The Midland Police Department is investigating 2 men who are involved in a possible fraud case, according to the city spokesperson. MPD's Financial Crimes Unit is investigating Jamie Thompson and William Logsdon, who were conducting business as Magnum Oil and Gas, or Magnum Exploration. According to the press release, the fraud victims invested money in undervalued oil and gas leases with Thompson, Logsdon, or a representative of Magnum Oil and Gas / Magnum Exploration. If you have recently invested with the company, contact Sergeant Ray Flores with the Midland Police Department at 432-685-7175. This story is entitled USGS Reports 2.9 Quake Near Stanton. The U.S. Geological Survey reported Monday morning a 2.9 magnitude earthquake in central Martin County. The earthquake took place 13 miles northwest of Stanton, around 8:11 a.m., and happened at a depth of 4.9 miles, according to the USGS. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is, quote, often felt, but only causes minor damage, unquote. According to UPSIAS, an educational site for seismologists, there are about 30,000 quakes each year, according to the site. This article was compiled and written by Mercedes Cordero. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled PB Natural Gas Flaring Set to Rebound by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. Operators in America's biggest shale oil basin are set to significantly increase the amount of natural gas they burn into the atmosphere because of a lack of pipeline capacity to ship it elsewhere, according to Rystad Energy. Permian Basin gas production has rebounded more quickly than oil since the pandemic, leaving pipelines effectively maxed out. It will be the latter half of next year before several major pipeline expansions come online to ease the shortage. Producers that haven't yet secured space on existing pipes face a stark choice: throttle back gas and halt more valuable oil production, or continue to pump crude and burn off the excess gas. Going for the latter would threaten to undo much of the progress achieved in the last few years to address the industry's flaring problem, which hasn't just attracted the ire of climate change activists, but also that of ESG-minded investors. "It's inevitable that some produced gas will just be flared," said Alexandra Ramos-Peon, head of shale research at Rystad. Flared volumes could triple to 3% of total production, driven by private operators with less stringent emissions targets, he said. Burning off gas, when many countries are struggling to contain crippling energy costs due to Russia cutting off supplies, may seem like a puzzling choice. However, the fuel is mostly a byproduct of more valuable oil in the Permian Basin. Choking back gas production would mean losing out on oil prices of around $90 a barrel, double most operators' break-even costs. As a result, for many companies, it makes more economic sense to flare off the gas, especially since permits are easy to receive from the Texas Railroad Commission, the state's oil and gas regulator. While wellhead flaring is less than half the peak of more than 600 million cubic feet per day reached in 2019, scrutiny from civil society groups and the environmental, social, and governance investing movement has grown markedly since then. Pipeline companies like Energy Transfer LP or Kinder Morgan Inc. typically prefer to build or expand pipelines only when they are confident there will be enough oil or gas to fill them. Build a pipeline too early, and there's a risk of not securing enough flows to repay the high upfront cost. But build them too late, and transportation shortages can occur, resulting in the need to flare. It appears the latter is happening in the Permian. The basin's gas production has increased by more than 30% since the pandemic, compared to a rise in oil output of just 12%. Meanwhile, the price of gas at Waha, a sales hub in the Permian, has plunged relative to the benchmark Henry Hub, even trading negative last month, indicating a bottleneck in the basin. "We think our gas takeaway is going to be tight, really, for most of next year, and probably well into 2024, until we get some of the major pipes on," Diamondback Energy Inc. Chief Executive Officer Travis Stice said November 8th. There's evidence to suggest that operators may already be stepping up flaring. With pipelines effectively full, any unscheduled outages mean gas has nowhere to go. Excess effective capacity is so thin that any kind of upset in maintenance, we're seeing an instant rise in flaring in the Permian, said Zenana Tiganj, a senior analyst at Rystad. The impact of localized outages can be severe. In May, problems with a gas-gathering system in Howard County meant that private operators connected to it flared 40% of the gas they produced, more than 10 times higher than usual levels, Tiganj said. Flaring levels reduced over the subsequent months as the problem was fixed, Tegange said, but in October there were signs of more problems in Howard County, with operators asking the Texas Railroad Commission for permission to flare even higher volumes than in May. This article is entitled, Biden's Potential Plan to Stock Up on Diesel May Bring Price Surge, by Chunzi Zhu, Bloomberg. President Joe Biden is considering forcing the nation's fuel suppliers to keep a minimum level of inventory in tanks this winter as a means of preventing heating oil shortages and keeping prices affordable. It may actually do the opposite. Such a requirement would essentially sideline fuel supplies in the market today and divert them into tanks for safekeeping, a shift that could create a demand surge in the short term and an ensuing spike in prices. It would result in product that would typically be exported going into storage, said Jason Gabelman, an analyst at Cowen & Company, driving up prices in the Northeast without bolstering supplies in the market. There is this precedent. In July, pipeline operator Magellan Midstream Partners LP raised minimum inventory levels for fuel stored throughout its pipeline and terminal system in the U.S. Midwest, sending wholesale diesel prices there soaring. A federal mandate could touch off an even larger scale rally. The East Coast has grown increasingly reliant over the years on fuel imports from Europe, especially Russia, and Russia's war in Ukraine has limited those shipments. Meanwhile, the largest refinery in the East Coast is preparing to go into maintenance in the middle of the region's heating demand season, which typically peaks in January and February. This article is entitled IEA, Oil Markets Face Upcoming Strain with Stockpiles at 18-Year Low, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. Oil inventories in developed nations have sunk to the lowest level since 2004, leaving global markets vulnerable as sanctions on Russian exports take effect, according to the International Energy Agency. Supplies of diesel fuel used in trucks are exceptionally tight, and prices may need to climb further in order to rein in demand, the Paris-based agency said in its monthly report. Oil markets remain finely balanced going into the winter months, said the IEA, which advises most major economies. The approaching EU embargoes on Russian crude and oil products and a ban on maritime services will add further pressure on global oil balances. International oil prices remain above $90 a barrel, even after a recent pullback, stoking inflation and posing a headwind for economic activity. The OPEC Plus alliance, led by Saudi Arabia, has nonetheless announced production cuts this month and next, a move the IEA has said the producers' group should reconsider. Fuel consumption is already showing signs of strain from elevated prices, with global demand poised to contract 240,000 barrels a day this quarter compared with a year ago, the agency estimated. Demand will average 100.7 million barrels a day in the period. Combined government and industry oil stockpiles in developed nations have fallen below 4 billion barrels for the first time in 18 years, having declined by 177 million barrels this year, as the U.S. and other consumers tap strategic reserves to keep fuel prices in check. This article is entitled, Midland-built satellite continues to pass all tests. Deployment of array paves way to build Bluebird satellites in Midland, by Mella McEwen. Midland-born Blue Walker 3 continues to successfully pass all tests in the quest to implement a space-based cellular broadband network. AST Space Mobile said the satellite, built at its Midland headquarters near Midland International Airport, successfully completed deployment of its communications array. At 693 square feet, it is the largest ever commercial communications array deployed in low Earth orbit. No one builds satellites with that size array anymore, at least for low Earth orbit, said Scott Wisniewski, Executive Vice President and Chief Strategy Officer. We were able to show it can deploy and test and set up interconnections with mobile network operators, he added during a telephone interview with the Reporter Telegram. Blue Walker 3 is designed to communicate directly with cellular devices via 3GPP standard frequencies at 5G speeds. The 693-square-foot array is critical to support a space-based cellular broadband network, and the satellite is expected to have a field of view of more than 300,000 square miles on the surface of the Earth. AST is now turning its attention to a design that is new yet similar to the Blue Walker, known as the Block 1 Bluebird, which are similar in shape and size to the Blue Walker, but with more capabilities that will start commercial space mobile service. The company is working on 5 satellites at its Midland headquarters with plans to launch all 5 in late 2023 and begin intermittent commercial service in 2024. The company also acquired a second site down the road from the headquarters building and has been investing in parts and equipment to set up the site. Some assembly of the Blue Walker were done there, Wisniewski said. Plans are to begin building new and much larger Block 2 Bluebird satellites using the second site, beginning sometime in 2024, with the ultimate goal of building up to 6 Bluebirds per month. Wisniewski said the company is ramping activity at its Midland facility, as evidenced by the construction of the Bluebird satellites, which will require more headcount for sure. The company's presence has already given rise to businesses that supply components for the satellites, he said. It makes sense to make them locally, he said. Midland's population of technically oriented workers was an attraction, said Wisniewski. So was the facility where AST set up its headquarters. It wasn't in use, but it was the right size. It was perfect for us, he said. The company has also developed a positive relationship with local officials and with state officials, he said. This column is called Commentary. It is entitled, Lack of Literacy is Costly to Both Region, State, by Mark Palmer, guest columnist. Mark Palmer is CEO of the Abel Hanger Foundation. On Thursday, the Midland Chamber of Commerce will hold its annual State of Education Lunch. The topic is literacy in the Permian Basin. Please come and learn about the issue and what you can do in your sphere of influence to improve our condition. The Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin is working on behalf of our community to increase awareness of our regional literacy deficits and address those needs by building the capacity of local nonprofits and other institutions serving low-literate individuals. We do that through subgranting, collaborations, training opportunities, and advocacy. A recent study by the American Institutes of Research quantified the literacy deficits of Midland County. The study reveals that more than one-third of adults in the Permian Basin read at or below a third-grade level. In some counties in our area, that number climbs to 50%. According to the same study, this deficit can slow economic growth, overall earnings, and related business activity. Estimates show that the total economic cost to Texas of the shortfall in adults with Level 3 literacy in 2020 includes negative $16.4 billion in annual gross product and more than negative 186,000 jobs. Without intervention, these losses are projected to rise to negative $67.5 billion in annual gross product and about negative 766,000 jobs by 2050. The Texas Association of Workforce Boards has concluded that Texas faces a crisis in education, and unless changes are quickly made, by 2040, Texas will experience a weakened economy, with an undereducated workforce that will be less attractive to businesses, decreasing tax base to fund state and local governmental services, and declining revenues to build and maintain infrastructure. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board projects that by 2040, the Texas labor force will need 60% of all 25 to 34-year-olds, almost 2 million people, to hold industry-recognized certificates and college degrees. Only around 35% of this group currently has these qualifications. It's predicted that technology will replace around 20% of workers with the lowest literacy. For every dollar spent on adult illiteracy, society reaps $7.14 in returns, whether through increased revenues or decreased expenditures. Now that you know, join us on Thursday and learn what you can do to help. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, November 16th. Bobby L. Stovall, Sr. Bobby L. Stovall, Sr. of Midland was called home on November 12th by his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. A memorial service is scheduled at 11 a.m. Friday, November 18th at Fellowship Baptist Church in Greenwood. Bob was born on October 1st, 1940, to beloved parents Reverend J.W. Stovall and Velma Lee Stovall. He married the love of his life, Jackie Elaine Hill, on November 6, 1959. He lost her in 2018, just a month shy of their 60th wedding anniversary. Bob was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Jackie, his brothers Jimmy and Richard Stovall, his in-laws Travis and Lorraine Hill. He leaves behind to cherish his memory his sister, Bernice Anderson, sisters-in-law Wynn Stovall and Sally Muir, his three sons, Bobby Stovall Jr. and wife Stephanie, Travis Stovall and wife Shelley, and Jim Stovall and wife Shanna, as well 7 grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Fellowship Baptist Church Building Fund, Church 10700 Farm to Market Road 307, Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Herbert Lloyd Joyner. Herbert Lloyd Joyner, age 93, passed away November 11th in Dallas. He was born on May 15, 1929, in Duster, Texas, to Herbert and Stella Joyner. He was raised in Jal, New Mexico. He is preceded in death by his parents, Herbert and Stella Joyner, siblings Otis Joyner and Dorothy Workman, and his daughter-in-law, Becky Joyner. He is survived by his wife, Bonnie Joyner of Dallas, son Michael Joyner and wife Patty of Lubbock, Steve Joyner and wife Linda of Nashville, Tennessee, and daughter Roxanne Wright and husband Dennis of Plano. He is also survived by 8 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. A funeral service will be held on Thursday, November 17th at 10 a.m. at the Ted Dickey West Funeral Home at 7990 President George Bush Turnpike in Dallas. Burial will be Tuesday, November 29th at 2 p.m. at the Kermit Cemetery in Kermit. Kinnon Merrill Hines. Kinnon Merrill Hines passed away on November 7th. A graveside service and interment will be held at Westbrook Cemetery, South FM 670 Road, Westbrook, Texas, on November 19th at 3 p.m. Kinnon was born on June 28, 1965, in Farmington, New Mexico, to June Reeves Hines and Donald Merrill Hines. The family later moved to Midland, where Kinnon graduated high school and became a skilled tradesman and supervisor. Kinnon married Sally Bradshaw Hines, and they were blessed with a daughter, Kendria. Kinnon is survived by his daughter and former wife, along with many cousins. Kinnon was preceded in death by both his parents. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Martha Harris Swindle. Martha Harris Swindle, 85, departed this life on November 5th. Celebration of Life service will be held Thursday, November 17th at 11 a.m. at Alexander Temple Church of God in Christ. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery under the direction of Griffin Mortuary. Visitations will be held Wednesday, November 16th from 5 to 9 p.m. at Hope Chapel. Martha Harris was born in Dawson, Texas on June 20, 1937, to the parentage of Lillian Simmons Harris and Herman Lee Harris Sr. The memory of this phenomenal Proverbs 31 woman will be honored and cherished always by her daughters, Angela Swindle Wright and Deidre Swindle Rogers, as well as three grandchildren, her brother, Herman Harris Jr., sisters Herma Laureen Ford, Lillian Harris Blaylock, and Alberta Harris Johnson, as well as a host of nieces, nephews, and friends. Death notices. William Watson Clifton, Jr. William Watson Clifton, Jr., 70, of Midland, passed away November 10th. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, November 22nd at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American News on Wednesday, November the 16th. Landgraf files Texas Energy Independence Act. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican from Odessa, filed House Bill 33 to stall the implementation of any new federal regulations on oil or natural gas production in Texas, a press release stated. HB 33, nicknamed the Texas Energy Independence Act, is the first of several pieces of legislation Landgraf plans to file during the 2023 legislative session to defend Texas energy. The goal of HB 33 is to ensure no Texas state taxpayer dollars or resources are used to implement any new federal regulations on oil and gas production in Texas. Landgraf stated in the press release, "The Biden administration has Texas energy in its crosshairs, and we need to make sure that we aren't supplying them with ammunition." House Bill 33 protects Texas state agencies and officials from contracting with or providing assistance to any federal agency or official regarding the enforcement of a federal statute, order, rule, or regulation regulating oil and gas operations if the regulation is not already existing law. Texas oil and gas production provides billions of dollars of tax revenue and directly or indirectly employs Texans in every corner of the state, Landgraf stated in the press release. "We produce oil and natural gas cleaner, safer, and with more concern for human life and dignity than any other major oil-producing region on Earth. The Texas Energy Independence Act will help preserve the Texas economy and hopefully the United States of America as a global force for good." Landgraf and the other members of the Texas legislature will convene for the 88th Texas legislative session on January the 10th, 2023. Members of the Texas House and Texas Senate may file bills for the 2023 legislative session as early as November the 14th, 2022. The Texas legislature meets at the Texas Capitol Building for a 140-day regular session beginning the second Tuesday in January every odd-numbered year to vote on proposed legislation and pass a balanced state budget. Homeboy Industries founder speaks about tolerance. For the past 35 years, Jesuit priest Greg Boyle has given his life to helping turn gang members' lives around through Homeboy Industries, the largest gang intervention, rehab, and reentry program on the planet. It sees more than 10,000 gang members a year walk through its doors. Boyle was the featured speaker at Odessa College Honors Tuesday at Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. CBS 7 anchor Jay Hendricks was the MC. Boyle also spoke Monday night at the OC Sports Center. For each engagement, he brought homeboys Jarvis Thompson and Solomon McIntosh. The individuals and organizations honored for their impact in education were Angie Hurt King for Outstanding Individual, XTO Energy, Outstanding Business, the Junior League of Odessa, Outstanding Nonprofit, the late Buddy Hale, Outstanding Educator. Videos with representations from each recipient were played before their awards were presented. Boyle said they have 11 social enterprises, such as bakeries and restaurants in L.A. We started a thing called the Global Homeboy Network, so there are 300 programs in the United States and 50 outside that are modeled on Homeboy, Boyle said. I was the pastor of the poorest parish in the city, called Dolores Mission, that had the highest congregation of gang activity, so I couldn't very well ignore it. We started a school and then businesses, and now we're quite large, Boyle said, in a media availability before the event. In the beginning, it was about gang members for those 300 programs, and then it was returning citizens. Then it was homelessness. So it's kind of a model that people use for addressing complex social dilemma, Boyle said. He added that the program sticks, but it's a rehab. It works if you work it, so you have to kind of surrender to it, Boyle said. People experience relapse all the time, he said. We're not toppled by relapses, but they come back. Our place is like an AA meeting. There are people there who are 20 years sober, people who are 20 minutes sober, and people who are drunk. So that's the feel of the place, Boyle said. Getting people to stand in awe of what the poor have to carry rather than in judgment leads to being able to say, we belong to each other, and so how do we create a community of beloved belonging, rather than us versus them, which never works, to say nothing of the fact that it's not true. There is no us and them. There's just us, he said. During his remarks, he quoted the late Representative John Lewis, a Republican from Georgia, who said, we all live in the same house. Boyle has been a Jesuit for 50 years and a priest for 38 of those years. He earned a bachelor's in English from Gonzaga University, a master's degree in English from La Jolla Marymount University, and a master's in theology from the Weston School of Theology in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Being educated by Jesuits is what made Boyle want to go into the ministry. He found them hilarious, prophetic, fearless, and joyful. I thought, well, I want what they're having, Boyle said. Boyle said he loved being in Odessa and being with Thompson and McIntosh. They have been welcomed by OC and by this community so much that they're kind of blown away by it. It's wonderful to see them so exhilarated in the welcome they've received, Boyle said. During his remarks at the luncheon, Boyle described the homeboys' stories of neglect, abuse, torture, prison, and prison time. Boyle often brings the homeboys with him when he speaks and gives them a chance to tell their stories to rooms full of people. Thompson and McIntosh both said they enjoyed being in Odessa. I was skeptical because I've never been to Odessa. I've never been in Texas. But I knew it was going to be something good and something fun and just the excitement of being somewhere new I've never been. It was a wonderful, good feeling. I was a little nervous, but it was a good feeling. And then when I got out here, I got treated with nothing but love. The love here, I love it, Thompson said. McIntosh said he loved the hospitality and the food. It's warming. It's a nice big community. I like that, McIntosh said. Man accused of causing wreck while racing. An Odessa man is facing felony charges after several people were hurt during a racing incident Monday morning, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. According to a DPS report, a trooper was dispatched to a multiple vehicle crash on FM 1936 near milepost 324 in Ector County around 12:30 a.m. Monday. The trooper determined that a Pontiac GTO was traveling at a high rate of speed when it collided with several vehicles parked on the side of the road, and multiple people suffered serious bodily injuries as a result. Several witnesses told the trooper the driver of the Pontiac, Joshua Jeremy Burke, 31, was racing at the time of the collisions. Burke was arrested on suspicion of racing on a highway causing serious bodily injury or death, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He was released from the Ector County Jail later the same day on a $20,000 surety bond. Man arrested on possession of child pornography charge. A tip from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children led to the arrest Thursday of a 25-year-old Odessa man on a child pornography charge. According to a Texas Department of Public Safety report, after special agents received a tip from the center, they obtained search warrants for certain email addresses and discovered more than 1,000 child pornography images and videos. A special agent interviewed the man associated with the email addresses, Joe Angel Lara, and he confessed he's been viewing hundreds of child pornography images since he was 15 on the dark web, despite knowing it was wrong, the report said. He gave agents permission to search his apartment, and they found a cell phone with child porn images and videos on it. Lara was arrested on suspicion of possession or promotion of child pornography, a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. He remains in the Ector County Jail on a $20,000 surety bond. Commissioners to discuss JP training. During Thursday's special session, the Ector County Commissioners Court will talk about the newly elected Justice of the Peace for Precinct 3 and Precinct 4 attending additional training in December before taking office in January 2023. This agenda item and others will be heard at 10 a.m. Thursday at the Ector County Administration Building Annex, located in room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said over the phone on Tuesday afternoon, the training is broken up into three parts, with the first starting in December. Hayes said the commissioners need to discuss this item as Bill Bowen and Elizabeth Baza, Justice of the Peace, for Precinct 3 and 4 respectively, wouldn't be considered county employees until they are sworn in. The court will also canvass the vote totals for the general election held November the 8th, consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a request for donation to repair two pool tables for the North Side Senior Center. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to accept a $600 donation from Ironman Specialty Fluids for the North Side Senior Center. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to amend the 2022-2023 Ector County holiday schedule. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a fuel flowage fee per gallon increase to 20 cents based upon the contract between Ector County and the FBO at Schlumeyer Field Airport, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve an administrative services agreement between Ector County and UMR Inc. and to ratify the county judge's signature. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the subrecipient agreement with Greater Gardendale Water Supply Corporation for the Gardendale-Ector County project and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the renewal with VSP, Vision Service Plan. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the revision of the procurement and procurement card policies and procedures, and authorize the county judge and other county officials to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the FY 2023 budget amendment to Sales Tax Fund Planning and Development, Departmental Furniture and Equipment, to subscriptions from unreserved fund balance. To consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the FY 2023 budget amendment to General Fund, Sheriff Law Enforcement Supplies, to special department equipment and to donated revenues. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the attached FY 2023 budget amendment for the increase in liability insurance premiums. Consider and approve the accounts payable fund requirements to review county financial statements and reports. Pursuant to Chapter 232 of the Texas Local Government Code and other authority, a public hearing will be conducted by the Commissioner's Court regarding the proposed subdivision and manufactured home rental community regulations for Ector County, Texas regulations. The regulations may be A, reviewed and copied during regular business hours at the office of E.D. Landrum, Jr., the Director of the Planning and Development Department of Ector County, Texas, in the Ector County Administration Building Annex located at 1010 East 8th Street, Odessa, Texas. Discussion and potential action shall occur regarding pursuant to Chapter 2007 of the Texas Government Code and other authority, the approval of a takings impact assessment regarding the proposed subdivision and manufactured home rental community regulations for Ector County, Texas. The scheduling of a future public meeting of the Commissioner's Court to consider approval and enactment of the regulations and the issuance of public notice regarding said meeting as required by law and all related matters.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.